Good morning, everyone. Well, good morning. Thanks for coming. My name is Charlene, and I'm actually from Supporting Active Independent Lives, or the SAIL group, and I am part of the Triad group that meets and plans these sorts of presentations. So I just wanted to thank you all for coming and let you know just really quickly, if you don't realize, the Triad group is a national and local organization that is all about protecting the safety of residents in the community. And so that's part of why these programs are being offered. And today, there's just a couple of announcements. If you want to sign up for future presentations to learn about them, we have a sign-up sheet here in the front. If you just want to put your name and either an email or a mailing address so that we can contact you about future presentations, feel free to do that. And then we also have a list of upcoming programs as well for the next couple of months. So if you want to get those on your calendar, they will be held in some different locations other than this location here. So we wanted to make sure and let you know that as well. Our next one is in February at Oakwood Village, and that one is going to be about the Silver Alert location. So today we have Lieutenant Mike Hansen, right, from the West District, and he's here to talk to us a little bit about what they're doing in the community, what they're seeing as far as different bad things that are happening out there, and what they're doing to prevent those things from happening, and kind of what's going on in the neighborhood. So without any further ado, pass it over.
Thank you. It's always interesting when I hear the silver alert, because I wonder if I'm qualified. I got the gray hair to prove it. And one of the things when I worked downtown we did all the time was card people to make sure they're able to get into the bars, make sure that we're checking it out. And I know this is 55 and older, and some of you look on the borderline of 55 here, so I'll card you after I leave here. A little bit about myself before we get into this discussion. I grew up on Chapel Hill Road, three blocks up the street here. And now I'm back in the West District and absolutely love it. And I obviously recognize so many people here, including Mr. Glomp, who his son and I went to school together 100 years ago. And Bill Bremer and I usher together, and he used to be my backyard neighbor. So it makes it fun to come back into the West District. I've been with the Madison Police Department for 14 years, and I've never dreaded going to work. I absolutely love it. It is a fun job. You get a front row seat to life, and see different things and try and help people. And that's why everyone gets into law enforcement, is try and help people. So I was out at the training center for a couple years. I was Chief Noble Ray's spokesman for 3 years, and then I've been on the street working in all the different districts. So it's fun to come back to the West District and have a little homecoming, because I also know where I'm driving around in the West District. One of the things I want to talk about, the goal of today, is just talk about a relatively new program that we're doing in the Madison Police Department as a whole, and then what we're going to be doing the next level of this, just in the West District as a pilot program. And we're really excited about it because we've had some success with it. It's called the SIU, the Special Investigations Unit. And from our standpoint in law enforcement, we're dealing with a certain percentage of the population day in and day out, every single day, multiple times a day or a week. And it's either an arrest, or it's a contact, or we're looking for that individual. And what the national studies will show is that 50% of the crimes that are committed in a community are done by 6% of the population. So my job is secure due to 6% of the population, which is a very small number. But I'm not going to be unemployed anytime soon because they're driving crime. Not that I'm trying to work myself out of a job, but if we target those individuals, those 6% of the population, and offer them what this program is about, we know that we will have success in the community to be safer. And the number one goal of this program is that there is no more new victims, no more victims of violence. And a lot of these crimes deal with weapons, assaults, and what have you. And so we're constantly trying to protect from future victims coming about. So in 2010, my counterpart, Detective Tom Widmanse, proposed with Chief Noble Ray the Special Investigations Unit. And it was very successful in High Point, North Carolina. So what is it? What they do is they identify, and through our databases, individuals that we have a lot of contact with. What are they involved with? Well, we want them involved in violent crimes, weapons offenses, all those things that they've already had a past history with law enforcement with, and they continue to drive in our community those same violent crimes. So we put out a list of those, and all we have are a simple name or a number, so number 1 through 50. So no names, no sex, no race, none of that is put on it, just a number. And we look at their rap sheet. How violent are they? What type of weapons were they using? Has it been consistent over the years? And we look at that, and then we analyze who can we make a difference with. And obviously the ones on probation, they have court orders to adhere to what their agent wants them to do. So once we have this list of 50, we then narrow it down to a smaller number, let's just say 10. And we contact their agents, their probation agents, and we say we need to have a notification meeting with these individuals. And we know that if we identify the prolific offenders and bring them in for notification, they have to be there and they're offered a number of resources. So at this notification meeting, the offenders are in a room similar to this, a little bit bigger. And along the row of chairs are the sheriff, the police chief, criminal justice system, and then services, housing, education, getting your GED, employment. All these services are offered to them, and it's their last chance. It's their final warning. And at this notification meeting, our goal is accountability. So many people in the community that are our offenders have never been held accountable. From when they were young in school, growing up in the justice system, whatever it might be, they've never been held accountable. So what we're trying to do is, in this meeting, hold this individual accountable and say enough is enough. You're terrorizing the community with violence, with gunfire, what have you, and we're giving you this last warning. And this last warning is, we're going to give you everything you need if you want it, but it's up to you if you want it. We're going to give you an opportunity to get your GED, your high school diploma. We're going to set you up with a job. Many have not had a job before. We're going to set you up with Alcoholics or Drugs Anonymous. We're going to set you up with these resources, and it's up for you to take advantage of it. Well, that's fine and dandy if it's just law enforcement preaching and maybe some services, but the power of it comes from people that have already been in the system, been in prisons, and have chosen a different path. So then they can walk the walk and talk the talk that they have done this and they've been able to be successful in society. And the key for us is the follow through. So we offer these services, we're telling them about everything that's available, then we have to assign a detective. So out of 10 that were notified, we have 3 detectives. They then shadow and visit with these individuals that have been notified and want the services. If they screw up, in Dane County, if you have a burglary charge, and we'll get into that a little later, if you have some of these charges, you might get probation, you might get a slap on the wrist, or you might get some jail time. In this program, you will go back to prison. We did our research, we talked with all the judges, and we told them, if we're serious and committed, and we offer these services and everything, if they do screw up, we want the justice system there alongside of us to show that this has teeth. So we'll give you the services and hope you change your life around, but if it doesn't go that way and we make an arrest, we need the judges to follow through. And they have. And the success has been enormous. And success is measured by them taking advantage of the services, which many have. Success is, if they've screwed up, we've been on top of it right away and made an arrest and sent them to prison. Some individuals have completely changed their lives around, which is great, because that means we're not all living in fear of violence, gunfire, what have you. And they've taken advantage to be a productive member of society, getting their education, getting a job, what have you. Success has also been, they have screwed up, gotten arrested, and it's time. I mean, how many more warnings can you receive? It can't get bigger than the chief, sheriff, judge, U.S. attorney, district attorney, and then all these services giving you one more chance. So if you don't take advantage of it, you screw up, you're going back to prison. And there have been people that have done so. So the research was being done in 2009 and 2010. 2011, we received a grant. So we now have more detectives working on in this unit. And over 75 offenders have gone through this. And in that 75 individuals, the three-year impact is 74% of the people that were notified, official notification, have not committed a weapons violation. So remember, if you look back at their background, they have had violence in their background, they've had either knife calls, gun calls, some sort of violence, zero have had a weapons offense. And part of that is, at this notification meeting, the U.S. attorney says, you're all felons, and if you come to me with a felony charge, you won't meander in the Dane County jail system. You'll go to the federal system. And not to get sidetracked, but when we cleaned up Allied Drive, a lot of what we did was with federal charges. And what the federal government can do, besides what we're doing, is they send you to a federal prison for 5 or 7 years, whether it's in Madison, Denver, Atlanta, wherever. And the word got out that the feds don't mess around, and they'll take you federally, and you are gone. You're away from family, and 7 years means 7 years. There is no getting out after 20 days. So word started to spread. So at this notification meeting, the U.S. attorney, John Burriell, says, if you mess up with a gun and you're a felon, that's a federal charge. Don't do it, or you're going federally, I promise you. So a little bit of that fear is installed, and they know I can't have my DNA or anything else on a gun because they'll take me federally. So that's been a success. Like I said, some have completely turned their lives around, gotten their education and a job, and that's the goal. If somebody is arrested, that doesn't mean a failure on our part or on the system's part at all. It means they made a bad choice and they got arrested if they've been notified. The failure would be if no one holds them accountable. Think of why they got into this position in the first place. They didn't grow up with the rules, or they had pressure, or they didn't grow up with a traditional family, whatever it might be. Now, for the first time in their lives, they might be held accountable, and that's the goal. Get your education, get your job, and be productive. Get stable housing. And there are people that are not fit for this program. Sadly, we have a high concentration of mentally ill individuals in our jails or that have police contact. They probably are not going to be fit for this program. We need to outreach to violent offenders that can be held accountable through the justice system and with their probation agent in the courts. That's the goal of this program. So what we're doing now is, because it has been successful with the adults, everyone has to be an adult in this program, what we're doing now is There's some violent teenagers out there, some 16, 17, 18-year-olds that might not need this level of interaction with law enforcement and in their face and holding them accountable. But what we do is we call it Tier 2. So if you look at the program that I just described as being Tier 1, Tier 2 would be the outreach towards either teenagers or maybe that adult offender that is not quite risen to a Tier 1, but they're getting close if they don't change their ways. So we need to reach out with them. And it might not be the formal, we're just starting this in the West District this year. It probably won't be the formal sit down with the district attorney, the law enforcement, everybody. It might be just myself, another lieutenant, a social worker, and someone else going into the living room with mom and dad, whoever it might be, and saying, hey, your son Joe is going down the wrong path. We can't prove it that he's involved with all these burglaries and shootings and everything else, but his name keeps circulating. And that's fine. If he continues that path, we're going to catch you, and you will go away. But if you quit running with the youngsters that you are, the group that you're traveling with, whatever it might be, if you quit that, we'll give you these opportunities. And those opportunities are finish school, get a job, stable housing, whatever it might be. We'll offer those services. And we did one of these this summer over at Church on Prairie Road, here, I think it's Heritage Church, and it was powerful. The individual that we notified, it was our first one, and we had probably 7 or 8 service providers and law enforcement there. The 19-year-old that we brought in, his name kept coming up with shots fired and shooting at other individuals, rounds going into individuals' homes, innocent people. And his mom dragged him by the ear to get there, and he shows up. And so here's this hardened individual, 19 years old, gang banging, shots fired, drugs, whatever, and he brings his 15-year-old brother too. Mom wanted to get a 2-for-1, dragging him by the ears, which was fine by us. There were tears. The power came from an individual that we had notified 2 years prior. He spoke at the end and connected with this kid, and the kid understood it. So that was, I think, in July or August, in the summertime. And the kid reached out for services, tried to work on his GED, really made an effort. And this fall, we did do a traffic stop on him and did collect a gun. And it's still being worked out. But it was an example of not doing such a grandiose notification, but the power of reaching out to this kid and his family. His mom got it. His younger brother got it. He just needs to get it. And if you go back to your teenage days, the 16 to 19 to 20-year-old age range, there's a ton of pressure. And it's whatever you grew up with, it's times 20 right now for these young kids. If you grew up in Chicago or Holton, Maine, wherever it was, you had a set your own little world wherever you grew up. Now, this world is a whole lot more connected. So a kid growing up in Boston, Massachusetts is going to know what's going on in LA instantly. A kid growing up in Madison right now is going to know what's going on in Chicago instantly through the media, through their phones. We're just so much more connected. And these kids are trying to mimic something that's always bigger than them. So that's a challenge, not only for law enforcement, but society in general. That's been a challenge for us. The key to all this, though, is collaboration. We want to see success. We don't want to be arresting every single person because we can't. The jails can't hold them all. The court system, we know, will have them back out in 3 months, 6 months, whatever it might be, on some of these minor charges. So the goal would be, as long as they're still young, the 17, 18, 19-year-olds, and still have a chance to succeed in life, is to open these doors, open these windows to the opportunities that they have. Education, get your GED, start working part-time somewhere. So then when they're 25 and 30, they're not continuing their violent trends. So that outreach begins this summer. We're already starting to work on our list for Tier 2 in the West District. I assume most of you live in the West District and are interested in knowing what we're up to as a district. And that's what I have on the SIU program. I just wanted to comment, since most of you live in the West District, on some other events that are going on. As you know, this area has had a number of burglaries. And last week, Chief Koval and Captain Wall announced at a news conference some major arrests in burglaries. Three individuals were arrested, and there's more work to be done and hopefully more arrests. But as we've said all along, those three arrests isn't going to solve, or even when this fall, making one arrest, two arrests here, isn't going to solve it. It is bigger than just a little ring of three people doing burglaries. And we know that, and we continue to address resources at the burglary issue. So that's number one. Number two, when you look at the West District, we have about 85 to 80,000 residents, and we have 90 cops patrolling what would be considered the fifth largest city in the state of Wisconsin. It would be bigger than Eau Claire and La Crosse. So at night, you may only have five police officers working from 10 p.m. till 6 a.m. And at domestics and other calls, we always send two officers to a call. So that leaves three to cover from University Avenue about to Chavez Elementary School. It's a huge territory. And it stretches us thin. And when there's a big incident, like a gun, shots fired, it drains all of our district and some of the South District. During the day shift, you have more officers working, and if there were to be an incident at a school or a mall or anything, not only would you have the patrol officers, but you'd have commanders showing up, you'd have detectives, and you'd have 40 cops there pretty quickly if there's a major incident to stabilize the scene. Also in the West District, we're doing a lot of outreach into some of our challenged neighborhoods. Part of my job is supervising the neighborhood police officers. Those are officers that are in the trenches working in some of our challenged neighborhoods where we have neighborhood resource teams. We want those officers on foot. We want the intel that they gather, the relationships that they build, and to be a visible side of our department. Chief Koval is a phenomenal police chief. He is hilarious. He's brilliant. He was Bucky Badger. And he's got a huge heart.
He was Bucky
Badger. And he will tell you that in law enforcement, very few times, either during a day, a week, or your career, is there that violent incident where either you're using your gun or you're encountered in violence. Hollywood makes it sound like it's everyday occurrence. It isn't like that. So you do have these measures in law enforcement where you are up high, excited, and things are going on. But by and large, the rest of your shift and career and everything else is a little bit more stable. And during that stable time, Chief Koval wants us to be guardians and wants us to be out in the community. And I can't agree with me more than that, because that's what we signed up to do. So part of our outreach is exactly that. We're not up here on every single call excited and fending off violence. We can be out in the community helping, responding to calls, coming to Park Prairie or Prairie Park, giving a presentation, and making that connection with law enforcement. And what I'd add at the end of this is so many of our encounters with the community are on a positive note. I would imagine, looking around the room, if you've been pulled over, it's been a lot of years, and your only interaction is with that police officer, either in a positive manner or a traffic stop, some pulled over more than others. I always get the ones that are laughing.
But by and large, you don't have a major connection with law enforcement. And when you do, if it's a burglary or if it's a traffic stop or whatever it might be, that is a huge deal to you. And what we're telling our officers, when you go to that cold scene burglary that happened with the people not there, it happened 6 hours ago maybe, that might be their only encounter with law enforcement in the last 15 years. But you've been to 7 or 8 burglaries in the last month. So this to you is another burglary call. What we're telling the officers, and they know this, is that's their Super Bowl. That's the citizens' big event. And they feel violated, they feel traumatized, they feel hurt that someone was in their house. So we want our officers to have that empathy when they're there at the scene trying to process it. And that's another one of our goals. So I love the West District, as I mentioned early on. This is a fabulous area. People ask me all the time, one, has it changed since you grew up here? Yeah, it has. It certainly has. The first 20 years of my life were on Chapel Hill Road. And it has changed. And the whole city has changed. Chief Cobalt grew up here. It is, and he'll say it has changed. So the opposite of that is, well, I get people saying, well, how do we go back to our old days? I'm preaching to the choir here. You're not going to. The reality is, this is what Madison is in 2015. It's not going to be Madison in 1972. It's not going to be Madison in 1954. It's not. So how do you prepare yourself for this change and what's going on? One is to get involved. Two is to stay alert. And three is to pay attention to your surroundings at all times. Some personal safety messages that I can't help but share anytime I give a speech is, why do you have everything in your purse from 1942 lugging it around to Woodman's? We don't need that. You need your checkbook, you need your driver's license, $10 in cash, and maybe a credit card. That's it. You don't need 17 credit cards. You don't need $10,000 in cash. You'd be amazed at what we run into as a police department from people that have their purse or wallet stolen. Take that opportunity to do an inventory once every few months of what you're carrying around. That's number one. Number two, people are always nervous, and I brought some pamphlets about safety, senior safety, neighborhood safety, what have you. Feel free to take them. Number two is, when do I call police? I thought something was suspicious, and should I call police? You never know where a police officer is going to be. And we don't have set streets that we have to go up and down. Just the other day, I was called to a suspicious person. I happened to be out on the street doing some helping out patrol, and someone called in a suspicious person. They thought it was odd at 6 at night that someone was ringing the doorbell saying they're part of a survey. We're happy to go to that call. That is a great call for us to go to. Turns out we get there, and I was nearby, so I piped in and went. He showed me his credentials. He was from public television, and he was carrying around a clipboard and all checked out. I'm relieved that there isn't someone that got away, and the person that called it in is relieved that, okay, it was worth calling the police. And we all know we're paying high taxes, right? So you're getting your dollar's worth, your money's worth, when you call police. So feel free to call us. The opposite side of it is, about 6-7 years ago, a car backs into a bank parking lot. The guy walks out. I mean, most people pull in front way. He backs in, so that's clue number one. Clue number two is, as he's going in, he pulls the mask over his face, goes in and robs a place, and comes out quickly. So that's interesting. We found that out, though, about a half hour later when the witness told us. We thought that was strange that he backed into his stall and walked in pulling a mask, but we didn't call police. Oh, no. So we ended up catching the individual, but we learned about that a half hour earlier, but they didn't want to bother the police. Like I said, you are paying darn good taxes in the city of Madison. I know you, because I used to pay them, and I appreciate you doing it. So does Lori Worth from the fire department. We appreciate you paying the taxes. But at the end of the day, feel free to call us. We'd rather check it out and it be nothing than hearing about it 3-4 weeks later. So those are the programs that we're running in the West District for violent offenders. A little bit of safety tips. And I can stick around if you have questions. I know they want to make another commercial as well, but if anyone has questions, I'd be happy to help them. And yes, ma'am. Yeah.
I was wondering how many of the felons that you take after that notification meeting where they're all there, mm-hmm. however many are there, how many do you take in a class of, and how long does that class last? 3 years?
Good question. Very good question. So we do the notification, and it's a formal announcement of services and not threats, but hey, you screw up, we're going to come after you. So we do that, and then afterwards, law enforcement sticks around, and the probation agents stick around, and they have an opportunity, those that are notified, to come and meet with the service providers that are set up at tables as well around the room. So if they want to hook up with someone with housing or education, they will. And they'll set up, so that's to introduce yourselves, they'll set up a formal meeting a week later or next day or whenever, and it's up to that offender to go to that service provider's office and meet and try and figure out a plan from there. Our involvement technically ends after that meeting with the chief and the sheriff and all that. Our follow-up is we now are going to monitor you with our detectives. So these detectives don't take burglary cases on, they don't take homicides, they don't take anything else. They will be assigned to these offenders. If they screw up after official notification, that detective's going to know about it. The follow-up with our department might also be going to their house, asking how it's going. Do you need a ride somewhere? Do you need a ride to get to drug treatment? Do you need a ride to get to school? Whatever it might be. We are there shepherding them along, trying to get them to be successful. The first year out of prison is the most difficult year that an offender has. And along with this notification, those first 3 months are critical to build that relationship, get them the resources if they're committed. We'll know right away if they're not committed, and we'll start hearing things that they're dealing drugs again or involved in a shooting or whatever they might be involved in. We'll hear about it, and the detectives will develop probable cause, a term we use, to make an arrest. So if the person is not going with the program, we'll know about it, and that detective puts out an email to all the Dane County law enforcement agencies saying, we need to pick up Peter Pan and get him arrested for whatever the offense is.
Go ahead and tell me how many people.
Oh, so percentage-wise, so 74 have been notified. I don't have an exact percentage, but it's greater than 50%. Have said, you bet, I'm on board, I want to participate.
Okay, but after this meeting, mm-hmm. are there, how many do you take into the program that want to be in the program, or isn't that an issue?
Oh.
Is anybody?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We'd take 100%. We'd take everybody if we could, yeah.
Okay.
And so, that I see what you're saying. So, we would take them all. We only do these notifications 2 or 3 times a year.
Okay.
So it's not a weekly or monthly thing,
yeah.
Because a lot of research is involved in this.
Right.
We have to run reports of individuals that have had an enormous amount of police contacts or arrests or charges. We have to run that report, scale it down, and then we evaluate. Do we think they can be successful? Are they on probation? We're not just opening this up to the wind. We strategically look at and research who's going to be notified. What we don't do is look, so they're all a number. So it goes to a committee,
And that committee only gets the charges, a list of the charges, and they decide who should go to. It can be a male, it can be a female. It can be someone that's white, it can be someone that's black, Asian, doesn't matter. We don't want that committee to know that. We just want them to look at, out of all these offenders, who do you think we should notify? Who's violent? Who's had a history of assault, battery, weapons violations? And the cream rises to the top on who we should notify.
Well, it's been so not only enlightening, it has been so encouraging to me anyway, that the newspaper has been putting things in that are positive about these offenders. And one was in recently, a 21-year-old who just made, I don't know if it was your program now or another, where they were tutored and graduated and got a job with the help of this group that was working with them.
Yeah.
And turned 21 and also had a child at that time. So he had just made it age-wise in that program. And then just the other day there was one about Just Bakery and this guy that got out, and he had worked in prison in food service, and he is just coming along beautifully, it said.
Mm-hmm.
So those things help us realize that there is more hope.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so my name is Nancy Saiz, and I work at the city as well, Community Development Division, and as Lieutenant Hansen mentioned, there's a law enforcement piece, and I sort of put the providers together that go to these meetings, these notification meetings, to offer their services. And so the program that you're talking about is through MUM, Madison Urban Ministries.
Yes.
There's also a few other programs that we invite, but you're absolutely right. If there's always space and room for people that, like Lieutenant Hansen said, that are willing to take the help, if they take it, there's hope. And there are some that don't take it. And then just to answer your question really quick about how long do they stay in this program, once they're notified forever. So they're looked at for a long time.
Oh.
Yeah.
It doesn't end.
It doesn't end for them. It doesn't end. Did you have a question?
Yeah. You stipulated about housing and so forth with these programs, and it seems like there's a real concentrated, uncomfortable situation in some areas. When you try to rehabilitate and with the housing, is it more diversified than, because sometimes there's too many of the same type of people in a concentrated area. Do you look at that and try to relocate and diversify situations in the city?
Right, that's a very good question. So, from the law enforcement standpoint, the worst thing that can happen is an offender go back to a challenged neighborhood, because instantly there will be crime, drugs, what have you. So we know that. Now, what we don't deal with, though, is the housing. So we just respond, react, try and be proactive, but the reality of it is Hawks Landing, Maple Bluff, they don't have, they don't have the resources in place to have a community house for six offenders to live in. And I don't see that happening anytime soon. So
the city places some of this. So is the police department trying to work with the city so that there is a better environment for everybody in the city? Because you see the areas deteriorate, and it just, somewhere there's got to be some balance.
Sure. Go ahead. Please do.
So you're absolutely right, and I think part of the issue, like Lieutenant Hansen said, with mentioning Maple Bluff and neighborhoods like that, is that if there is going to be a home where, as you know, sex offenders need to be, they need to notify where they're living, and the neighborhood needs to be notified as to where these houses or individuals will be. And so, unfortunately, as much as I agree with you where, you know, they should be spread out and they should be surrounded by more of a positive examples, let's say, that's just not where a lot of these homes open up. And
hence, most country club turn part of that into
right, right. And so to that, I mean, we can try and ask.
Blackhawk.
We can try and ask, definitely, but more than likely it's a
yeah.
So I hear what you're saying. Unfortunately, through the providers that we work with, they have already worked out, you know, with landlords, because of course the landlords also have to be, the city doesn't own any homes. When Lieutenant Hansen says that we place them in housing, we're working with providers that already either have a deal with the landlord and there's the community has been notified. And so the city doesn't own, we own homes for low income, elderly, things like that. But when it comes to this type of homes for rehabilitation, we don't own them. We don't own any homes like that. So we have to work very close with the providers to see where we can put them. But I will say that the providers really like this program. Providers that own, you know, apartment complexes, let's say, with 4 units or 8 units, whatever, they really like this program because as much as they would like to have a live-in, what do they call it, resident who watches over them, sometimes that's not possible. But the fact that there's detectives that make unannounced visits, they love it. They love it because people already know that there's going to be that follow-up from others. So I hear what you're saying. If it was Nancy's world, there would be a lot more.
And none of these landlords are slum landlords. I mean, they are.
So,
well,
they're
slum landlords. No. There's some. Yep.
So because there are specific people that have specific backgrounds, they're already being looked at in a different way because you have to get permission to have those homes. It's like when you have a mental health residence, for example. You have to get permission from state, you know, federal money, things like that. So, no, they're being watched a lot more closely. But yes, there are landlords that are some landlords that don't work in a program, but may rent to people like that have backgrounds.
But does that cause then an issue because of the type of clientele that may be in that landlords?
Right, and so as Lieutenant Hansen, please change it. So as he mentioned, there's neighborhood resource teams. When I started, there were only 4 neighborhood resource teams. There was the West, South, North, and East. And that's where I originally met Mary Scamstead, which was here earlier, but she's not. And now there's 9. Through Soglin, there's 9, where we're a lot more focused in certain neighborhoods. So on the West District, there's actually 3 neighborhood resource teams. So one of the things that we do, because we do have housing in Section 8 through the city, we make sure that we have a representative from each agency, police, fire, community development, economic development. Every agency in the city has a representative in these teams because that facilitates the communication if there are slumlords and how they're renting, and building inspection. Can building inspection go in there and see, you know, what the landlord needs to do? Because a lot of times, unfortunately, many landlords that own some of the apartment complexes don't even live in Madison. They're just collecting rent. So this group, the neighborhood resource teams, really help because then if the police officers say, you know what, there's this building and they just have somebody that collects rent. Well, building inspection can go in and look at how the building looks. Is it violating any codes, any zoning, anything? Then we can all work together, not only for appearances, but also for people's health. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, the neighborhood.
Exactly. So that's where we work together, I think, through the neighborhood resource teams to sort of help with what you're saying, you know, where everyone's living and to really you know, get the landlords and let them know that we're all watching, that it's not just the police officers, but it's building inspection, it's public health, it's, you know, all these agencies through the city of Madison that are really paying attention, and we're looking out for what's happening in our neighborhoods.
Mike, the gangs, how that, trying to get them out of the gangs, is that part of SIU's, do they look at that, or what percentage are, that go into the program or come through the gang? Is that one of the criteria that you look at?
It is part of that, because gang ties are very strong. And that gets flushed out during the selection process of who we're going to notify. That's difficult. It's very difficult, because if they're already coming from broken homes, the next stability that they have are their peers and friends. And so that every kid wants to feel stable and a sense of security. It's just, where do they find it? Most of us found stable and security with our family. Well, if they don't have something to turn to, they then turn to peers and gangs. So it's very hard to break that connection for a kid being involved in a gang or a young adult. And we can offer the resources. We need more resources. We need more opportunities to get out of a gang. Because what we're finding is the recruitment in the middle schools, young high school, and not only can they run errands for the kid, for the gang leaders, they can run errands because they're still younger for them, but they glorify the gang life and the money, the weapons, what have you. And it's no secret. I mean, we have gangs in Madison, and they can be very violent. So it's recruiting in the middle schools and high schools that we focus our efforts. The anti-gang message, other opportunities, sports, academics, theater, whatever it might be, as opposed to the gang lifestyle. Dave.
First of all, thanks for coming in. And I was not aware of the SIU program, and I think it's a good one. The only group that you didn't mention, and I want to know if there's a buy-in from them, is the district attorneys. I know that the district attorneys have limited resources. They'll tell you that every time you talk to them, that they need more district attorneys. They're overloaded with cases and what have you. And in that respect, they have to take the more serious ones and then push the other ones aside. Are they bought into this SIU program? Because the bad guys know that the district attorneys are overworked. And if prosecution doesn't occur, then they think they're getting a free pass, and that would undermine what you're trying to do with SIU.
Yeah. That's a very good question. So before this was started up, the Tom Woodmansey, our lieutenant that founded or worked with this program more intensely, met with the judges and district attorney and would not move forward unless we had their buy-in. So that's my failure in not mentioning them. But yes, the district attorney is involved in this. And what happens is, like the individual that I explained that was 19 this summer that we notified and later is caught with a gun, is for those cases where we do have an arrest and they need to get launched into the prison system, we will meet with the district attorney before all the paperwork's done and saying, this is what we got. We notified him. He was on our list. We've been keeping an eye on him. He did good for the first 2 months, but then, you know, he battered his girlfriend or whatever it might have been. We need this one to go through the system and not a plea agreement to do community service or whatever it might be. We have to do something. And they have been very cooperative, and that was their goal all along. If we sense that it's a charge that they really need to go along or go away for a long time, or we need to send the message, we have the option for some crimes to go to the U.S. attorney, and they're anxious to justify and all that good stuff. But no, we have a good relationship with this program, with the district attorney's office. Any other questions?
Maybe one more question?
Sure, yeah.
If there is another.
I would just add, I never get this opportunity. One, take advantage of the pamphlets. And two, my mother is never in here when I present to different things. So she was married to a police officer for 35 years and went through the riots of Madison. And now she has a son that's a police officer. So she's, And she's never turned down a babysitting moment for her six grandkids. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, that's right. And then there's Treats, is that right?
Mike, thank you so much. I'm a member of the Triad Planning Committee, and we want to thank you, Mike, Senator Hansen, and Nancy, for coming here and explaining the Special Investigations Unit program. It really sounds hopeful, and thanks so much.
You bet.